Before I get started today, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. You can hear her entire story on episode 188 back in 2021. If you're not familiar with Jeannie, let me introduce you to her. She used to be a burnt out high school teacher, and she struggled for over 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, anxiety, depression, digestion issues, etc. before healing herself completely and leaving that dead-end job. Simply put, she gets this stuff, especially that frustration and the overwhelm of not knowing next steps. That's why she'll be by your side the entire time in her one-on-one coaching program. She's checking in between calls. She's offering support and accountability throughout the week so that you can be successful. You're not doing this alone anymore, and it's the new year, meaning it's time, and I encourage you to book a free introductory call to learn more about her one-on-one coaching program right away. Go to jeanniecolwin.com, that's JeannieKulwin.com, to book your free call. Also, head over to her website, check out that impressive testimonials page so you can see her clients' transformations firsthand. It is February 1st. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I was telling a client of mine for my day job, my software job, that I had met with this person back on January 3rd. And I told her, hey, that meeting with you that we had just earlier this month, I mean, time typically flies by. But in this case, I told her that it felt like that meeting was 8 months ago. So I don't know what that says about time and our place in space and time. But I don't know. 2024 feels kind of odd so far to me. I don't know. There's some nuance involved. Maybe we'll get into that as the weeks and months roll on. But if you want to support the show, you hear Jeannie. Jeannie's been a wonderful sponsor for basically the last year and change. If you're not somebody that's wanting to sponsor the show, but you want to help out the show, throw a few bucks in the tip jar, go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Really helps out the show, keeps it on the air and available for everybody for free. So again, patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Back with an interview, and this interview I did quite some time ago. I feel like Dana Murphy and I from Vancouver Island sat down a month and a half ago or something and recorded this. And it's just been sitting in the hopper, and I'm excited for you to hear it. Basically, Dana woke up with this sudden headache, and it really just never left. And a lot of what we talk about that I really like is this idea of a trauma response and essentially living life with a trauma response. So I'm excited for you guys to hear her story. Let's take a listen. Let's sit down with Dana and I as we talk about trauma responses and all things mind-body. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I am here with, actually, I made a joke a couple of minutes ago. I'm here with another Canadian, Dana Murphy, from Vancouver Island, which Vancouver is one of my favorite places on earth, British Columbia, is here on the line with me. Can you hear me, Dana?
I can. Hi, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great having you. I'm interested to kind of dig in and learn a little bit more about you and some of the perspective that you've gained over the last few years and ultimately kind of where you see yourself moving in the future or progressing in the future. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. Okay. Well, first, like, tell us who Dana is. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah. So I moved to Vancouver Island about a year ago from my home province of Alberta. Spent most of my time there, kind of bounced to and from various locations. But my chronic pain story starts when I was 17 years old. It was actually just a couple of weeks before my 18th birthday. It was wrapping up high school, lots of moving parts, lots of changes that were about to happen in my life. And I very vividly remember this day that a headache started for me. And I very rarely got headaches before this point. But I got a headache one day and it just stayed around. It was there the next day and the day after that and so on. And it was persistent, waking up with it, going to bed with it. It was there every second of every day for what would turn into years. And I just remember being so afraid in those first few days of having this consistent pain. It was so new to me. Why is it here? How long is it going to last? That sort of thing. So that's when the doctor's appointments and just endless, just digging into where it might be coming from.
Yeah.
And nobody knew. Nobody ever was able to diagnose a cause. Like I was getting various diagnoses such as new daily persistent headache or tension headache or all these things that, you know, I'd go into the doctor's office knowing that I had chronic headache. So getting that sort of diagnosis didn't really answer any questions. So I'm sure many of the listeners of this podcast just know what that is like, yeah. Diving into physio, chiro, neurologists, all sorts of scans and treatments. Just bouncing from one professional to the next and just never really getting any answers. So I did that for, it was 10 years of trying to dig into everything. And it was never just, you know, one physiotherapist that I would see. I would see four or five because you're always wondering, you know, maybe the next person has the answer. Maybe they have that little missing link that the first person didn't have. So it's just, as you know, it's just fueled by so much fear.
Yep.
And ultimately that was what was at play. It's a lot of fear. So over time, so many more symptoms started to appear. Again, very typical TMS with loads of different symptoms. I think my list is about 20 or more long of different things, from hives to psoriasis. I had a bout of really, really bad back pain in my early 20s. And I look back on before that day in 2009 that I got this headache that lasted for years. If I look before that, now knowing what I know now about the mind-body connection, I can see so many other ways that nervous system dysregulation was presenting in my body. I had a lot of hives that we were never able to figure out, you know, what was causing them. Lots of different skin issues, you know, so many different aches and pains as a child. And, you know, I look back on that and it's so very clear to me where that was coming from. But that's what I was dealing with. So
what, I'm curious because the there's listeners all over the world, but the bulk of them are in the United States. And what was kind of your experience going? Because, I mean, it doesn't sound like you know any different in terms of living anywhere else besides Canada, right? Because you said Alberta and now you're in British Columbia. Was there anywhere, have you ever lived in the States?
I didn't live in the States. No, I lived in England and Scotland for some time.
Okay.
Otherwise it was Canada. Yeah.
What was the reception from, I'm curious on seeing these different physios and doctors and things like that. What was kind of the guess that they had, or did they seem like, hey, they do have, because I know that you had said like your perceptions, hey, that maybe this next one will have the key to unlock it that the last one didn't. Is that the sense? Mm-hmm. Like, did they give you a sense of hope as you would see new ones, or was it, what's kind of your temperature on that looking back?
No, good question. I would say I wasn't given a lot of hope from many of them. And I've reflected on this a lot, just the sort of feedback I got from them, lots of them saying things like you're going to be in pain for the rest of your life, or implying that, or they were at a loss and didn't know where to send me. I was told, you know, this is something you'll have to live with and you can try this medication. Mm-hmm. I'd ask about the medication. Of course, there'd be lots of side effects associated with that. And I just, that didn't sit well with me, you know, just settling for being on meds the rest of my life that would impact my life in other ways. So I didn't get much hope at all. And I look back though, and there was maybe a doctor or two who had asked me, are you stressed out? Which is a question that I appreciate it's being asked. The issue is a lot of people who are stressed out and who have lived that way for so long, or perhaps their entire lives, they don't know that they're stressed out. That's just the way that they've lived. And that was certainly the case for me. I diminished the things that I had been through that had caused my symptoms. Mm-hmm. And with that, I was answering things like, oh no, like everything's fine in my world, that sort of thing. So, so I think there are, you know, there is that recognition in the medical world of the impact that stress causes.
Yeah.
I think that's growing, the awareness of the mind body condition. I think part of what may be lacking, and I hope is growing as well, is recognizing what that might look like in people. It's not always the classic sympathetic fight flight energy that they're showing up into the doctor's office with. It might be that more shut down, low energy state of that dorsal vagal side of the nervous system.
Yeah.
And both of these can be really hard to recognize, because so many people with nervous system dysregulation are so used to covering up what they're feeling and going out into public and putting on the big smile or showing up in the ways that they have to. And so that can make it hard for some of these professionals to recognize when, you know, perhaps the bigger questions or deeper questions aren't being asked. So
talk about the, you had said, did you say polyvagal? Is that what you said?
I didn't, but yeah, I refer in a lot of what I'm doing in my own healing and helping others. Polyvagal certainly has some inspiration.
Cool. Yeah. So, so this headache started, you said 2009. Is that when that started?
Yeah.
2009. Was it like, what kind of led up to it, just in terms of, you know, pretend that there's not the TMS knowledge that you have, but more so like, did you hit your head? Did you get hit with a baseball? Like, was there anything like that? Or was it just, hey, I woke up one day and it was there?
I just woke up one day and it was there. Yeah.
Wow.
That was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing that I
could think of injury wise. And of course that was always the first question with medical professionals, but no, there was nothing.
So you go along and you're seeing some of these various, you know, PTs and doctors and things like that, and you're kind of not getting anywhere. And then how do you eventually, you know, get into a, hey, this path of trying to find physical causes is not, it's not helpful. And here's why, because it's really, you know, rooted in emotion or rooted in, stress, you know, you call it what you will.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, I chased down medical treatments for about 10 years. And I remember just being at such a loss and going to Google and typing something into the effect of what to do with my chronic pain. And that's when I started to, you know, it seems like such a simple search now. And surely I had searched that sort of thing before, but it was just something had popped up in the mind-body world that got me thinking and reading and searching into this whole other side of what was quite obviously causing my pain. And I remember that, you know, reading into it and it just clicked. This makes so much sense. Just ticking all the boxes of the ways that I had been coping in my life and ultimately how the pain was starting to show up. So I had a lot of those very typical coping mechanisms that are associated with mind-body illness, such as perfectionism, people-pleasing, that was a big one for me. Just ultimately a lot of ways that I was living my life from a trauma response rather than as my authentic self.
Yeah.
So started to really dig into that, see how I was showing up in my life and started to really do the work from so many different angles of therapy and journaling, meditation, exploring so many different ways of digging into the mind-body connection.
What were some of the, I guess, like, how did you start making, or what correlations did you find when you were kind of, you know, you sort of learned this is the way, and what sort of things were coming to mind, if you're comfortable sharing, but what kind of things came to mind as, you know, past experiences that could have precipitated this experience that you're now having?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a lot of repressed emotion. I was not somebody who was connected to my emotions. And I think when I started reading this about the mind-body connection, something really resonated with me of, I know there's stuff there that I haven't felt. There were, you know, to say the very least, stressful times in my life where I did not have supports. I did not have the tools I needed to process what I had been through. And I could really see how that was still very activated in my system and how I was primarily living in survival states in my nervous system, whether that was that hyper arousal or hypo arousal. I really bounced back and forth between the two for many, many years until I started to make some of these connections. And my mind body healing, it did start primarily, and I can't remember if this was the case for you as well, Eddie, but I did a lot of journaling, and that helped in me perhaps getting some more self-awareness, me seeing what the issues were that I was dealing with, but ultimately it wasn't deep enough for me. And I stayed so much in my head when I was journaling. I wasn't coming into my body and truly feeling with, honoring and releasing my emotions. I would just write and write and write, and I would stay up in my head, which again, it was another coping mechanism of mine, was to be in my head. And, you know, I'd love to chat about just embodiment in general in this conversation too, because that is just, you know, coming back into our bodies is such a great antidote to these things that we do, such as, you know, coming into our heads with racing thoughts or dissociating from the body. These are all coping mechanisms associated with stress and trauma. And I was one of those people as well. When I was journaling, I just wasn't getting to the thick of it. And I think the same applies for me with talk therapy. I was very much in my head, and those top-down approaches definitely have a place in healing for sure. We need to get to the root of it as well. We need to adopt those bottom up approaches of addressing the body and coming back into our bodies. So I stayed in that loop of journaling and meditating for quite a while, and with this belief of this is the only way to get out. But I think this is just such a good reminder for anybody, is that there's so many ways of healing. And if something's not resonating with you, try the next thing, or try that thing you feel really pulled toward, because I had this gut feeling of this doesn't quite feel like it, and I was feeling pulled to some of these bottom-up approaches and somatic therapy, and ultimately those are the things that really started to change for me. But
so that brings up the next segue is, I saw in your bio that you are trained in somatic therapy. Let's talk about that, because to me, somatic tracking or experiencing, or the word somatic, like whatever you want to put it, that is the number one tool in my toolbox. So I want to hear you talk. I want to hear you talk a little bit about that, how that resonated with you, and for starters, define it for us, because we've had people before that have that. You know, they're experts in it, they talk about it, they know about it, but it's been a long time. So can you just give us a reminder of what somatic therapy is?
Yeah, so soma refers to the body. So somatic therapy is therapy that's based in the body. So some therapists, or I don't know if that's the term you would use in the States, but counselors, therapists, psychologists, some of them might be trained in somatics. There are also somatic practitioners out there who are trained in somatics and don't necessarily have, registration as a counselor. So, but ultimately somatic means body. So that means we're coming into the body, feeling the feelings there, approaching nervous system regulation from an embodied way. So a somatic therapist will work with people quite often in a one-on-one, or you know, there might be group programs as well. And I've participated in some of those, which have been really, really healing as well. But a somatic therapist is there to guide you and hold space for you as you come into a more regulated state, or as you release stored stress, trauma, and emotions from your body. There's so many ways that we tense up or hold on to the past events of our lives, and they really shape how we move forward in our lives, both physically, emotionally, and otherwise. And when we start to really dive into and honor those parts of our bodies that are holding on and release those, you know, emotions and what might be staying around, there's just so much freedom that can come with that. So yeah, that's a bit about somatics. I'm so pulled toward it, and this idea of embodiment being, you know, it's just such an in for yeah. healing. Coming back into our bodies is how we learn the language of our nervous systems, how we're able to tell if a regulation technique is working for us or not. Because, you know, there's a lot out there which is fantastic in the realm of nervous system regulation, but the reality is that one thing that may work for one person might not work for the next. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about cold dipping, for example, and it's so great for some people. They get a lot of relief from it, regulation, happy hormones, all of that sort of stuff. And there are people who maybe their nervous system just isn't there yet. It can actually kind of take them further into dysregulation, or, you know, it might just be something that they don't enjoy. But by tuning into the body and starting to get to know what our cues of safety and our cues of danger are, we can start to really find out what techniques work for us yeah. and what techniques don't. So yeah, it's, you know, coming back into the body is learning that language of the nervous system. It's reconnecting to our emotions, because that is in the body as well. Like I said earlier, it's an antidote to rumination. If we're ruminating and living primarily in our heads, if we come into our body and, you know, kind of sit with the sensation that's coming up with that, that's how we can show up for ourselves. That rumination, we, you know, we often bring in multiple different stories at once, and it turns out that all impacts our body. Suddenly our body is acting as if all those different scenarios were happening at once as well. But if we can come out of that thought pattern and come into the body, see what emotion is happening there, and be with that, there's so much healing that can come with that. So
like walk us through what this looks like for somebody. Cause you know, there's a lot of people that are listening to this, and, it's nice to be able to have a suggestion or almost like a walkthrough if you're okay with that, or if you're comfortable yeah. with that. Just sort of describing how somebody can go about, using some of these techniques at home for themselves.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, and do you mean a somatic modality or how a session would go if somebody was in a session?
Well, or ways that, because I mean, ultimately, even if somebody's at a session, there's got to be something that they can do on their own at home as a suggestion, or ways to even come, because, yeah, I mean, you're totally right. People can yeah. very much get in their heads, and that's where they are. And that's why I think sometimes maybe journaling isn't effective for some people, is that they almost get into just like, it's almost like they're a script writer, or they're writing a movie, or they're writing a TV show, and it just becomes a story, as opposed to here's what I'm feeling, or here's what I'm feeling in my body. So maybe what are some suggestions or things that people could do as an alternative?
Yeah, for sure. I love that question, because, yeah, as I said, until I started coming into my body more, there was a lot of stuck things. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I've really adopted in my healing is just the power of self-soothing touch. And this is something that, you know, the reason this comes to mind in answering your question is it's something that we all have access to at basically any time. is self-soothing touch.
Yeah.
So the benefit of this is our bodies don't actually know the difference between somebody else giving us a hug or soothing touch versus when we're providing that for ourselves. Either way, it's providing oxytocin, which is an antidote to stress, and can help calm the system. So as I do this, I've just, you know, automatically got my hand on my heart. Yeah. And it might seem like such a simple thing. There's really a ton of power behind it. And there's so many ways that we can adopt self-soothing touch, whether it's hugging ourselves or that hand on heart that I mentioned, or a butterfly hug. That's where we've got our hands across our shoulders on the opposite side, just tapping back and forth, can be very soothing and calming in the same way that EMDR involves both sides of the brain. That butterfly tapping will do something similar. Mm-hmm. Or you can just experiment, like, you know, squeezing your legs, or maybe stroking your face, giving yourself a short or long massage on your face, things like that. Just exploring, okay, how is my body in this moment, and how might it react to these small feelings of touch? And for some people, you know, when I first started doing this, it was such a foreign concept to me. It was something I had not done before. I didn't realize that I could pause and give myself compassion and give myself that instant, you know, stress relief. So I was resistant to it at first, and fair if any of the listeners are as well. And until you start to maybe get a little more used to it, or become more embodied, more associated with the sensations in your body, then you might be able to tune in better to what might give you that sense of relief. One thing I like to show people, you know, as people are perhaps wondering, are you sure this is going to help me? Does it help me? Why? That sort of thing. If anybody wants to do it right now that's listening, if you just take one hand and put it over to your other arm, and just slowly starting up at your shoulder, squeezing, massaging all the way down slowly toward your hand, and just squeezing your arm, massaging it, however resonates with you, for, you know, maybe 30 seconds, something like that, squeezing your fingers, your hand, just little massages, whatever resonates with you. 30 seconds, maybe a minute. Maybe we do that for a minute. And then when you stop, you just bring both hands down by your sides or into your lap or onto the table in front of you, and just tune into your arms now and see if there's a difference between the two of them.
That's awesome.
So that's, yeah, just a way to tap into that of, okay, does it make a difference? Maybe you want to even out your arms now, because maybe it did make a difference, and you want to, you know, give them both that feeling of relief and of attention and love. And if that, you know, say for anybody listening that they did that exercise and they come out of it thinking, I didn't actually get anything out of that, that's okay too. Again, the sort of thing, it might be something that you'll adopt over time, or, you know, I had a bit of a time pressure on there for you of your 30 seconds or a minute or whatever it might be. So doing that in your own time, in your own space, dosing in some self-compassion and just starting to see, okay, how did my body react to that? But, you know, again, with tuning into the body, also starting to learn so much about ourselves, like, what are our cues of safety, what brings us that sense of regulation. And it can be that self-soothing touch, it can be, you know, co-regulation with another human or a pet. You might find that certain places bring you more regulation. Maybe you have a favorite spot in your home or in the forest. There might be a time of day that you really resonate with. So there are so many ways that we can explore what brings me safety and how can I get more of that into my life, as well as, you know, again, looking at those cues of danger as well. And it doesn't mean we need to avoid every single cue of danger or every single trigger, but we can start to look at them and see which ones can I maybe take away from my life or have less of or modify in some way. Or if they are things that you can't, you know, relieve yourself from at this point, how can you support yourself through them?
Yeah.
And bring in these resources, these cues of safety, as you tackle maybe those tougher things. So,
you know, one thing that's coming to mind is, sorry, what year did you say that, cause I know that the symptoms kind of they didn't begin, but the headache, at least we're talking about, was in 2009. Mm-hmm. How long after mm-hmm. that was it before, you sort of got on more of a healing path? What year was that approximately?
Yeah, that would have been in 2019. So 10 years.
10 years. Later. So I'm curious, like, because you sound so calm and serene, and you know, you don't sound like you're somebody that would have, you know, stress induced illness. But maybe that's part of the that's entirely just part of the TMS model too. But what was like 2007, 2008, 2009, Dana, like versus 2020 or 2021, Dana, like? Or now, for instance. I'm just curious, as we kind of wrap up here, give us some of the dichotomy between those two.
That's such a good question. Gosh, yeah. 2007, Dana, worried a lot. And I was a worrier from very, very early in childhood. I can remember some very early memories of worrying about things that I did not need to worry about. So I worried a lot. I people pleased and lived my life according to what I thought others wanted of me or what society wanted of me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, ultimately worry was a big thing versus now. Yeah. I would say I'm a much, much, I want to say different human, but I'm more in tune with the real Dana who was underneath all that worry and people pleasing. More in tune with that authentic side of me and living in the ways that I want to rather than what I think others or society yep. wants of me. And ultimately it comes down to just, yeah, how I'm able to show up for myself and support myself when I'm feeling difficult emotions or when I'm feeling dysregulated. I've gotten to know myself and my body and what I need in those moments. So, it's pretty neat to look back and see where this work can take a person. I was a longer heel, so to speak, for sure. Yeah. But you know, it was a hard go. It was a really, really difficult time for sure. And I'm also thankful for all these lessons that I was able to learn that I would not have hadn't I had, you know, all these symptoms that forced me into healing due to, you know, what I had been through.
So. Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for sharing that. Where can people find you? I mean, we started talking on social, but is there a particular place that people can find out more about you or get connected with you?
Yeah. So Instagram right now is the best place. I do have a few things on the go for other ways that people can connect with me. So depends when I get my website going, but yeah, in the meantime, people can find me on Instagram. My handle is @thismindbody, all one word. So
awesome.
Yeah. I'd be happy to hear from people if they've got any questions about what we chatted about today, your comments, or if anything resonated, it'd be yeah, great to hear from anybody.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Dana, hey, thanks for being here so much, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, sounds great. Okay. Thank you so much for the chat.
Eddie. Yeah, take care.
Okay, bye.